Director Altamirano.
Here.
Vice President Leija.
Here.
Director Scarbella.
Here.
President Treba.
Here.
Director Murphy.
Here.
Okay, do we have anybody? Nobody in the waiting room? Okay, nobody in the waiting room. Public comments. Does anybody have any comments or questions on the consent calendar?
Not, I have a motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, who was the first?
Leslie.
Okay, first was Scarbella, second was Leslie. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Correspondence and related information reports, operations report.
Miguel.
Water production report for the month of May. We had 432 acre feet produced for the month. You know, now we're on the upstream, the land is up, you know, more water. We'll produce more water in the next couple of months. We choked up that threshold back down again. Well, 18 as well, so you are two main producing wells. Water in the sewer again, so we had about 4.5 million gallons a day. One zone that is a million gallons of water to be applied to the other side.
I have a question for you, sir. Who do we supply potable water to in this area? Golf courses.
There's a golf course. The golf course actually has not potable water.
Get our small from Beast Bowl Supply?
No, Beast Bowl Supply, we get our chlorine.
Chlorine?
All we get from. I hear some stuff we've been working on. Yeah, sewer backer truck. As we know, that was purchased back in March 2025. And that's really been coming handy. You know, we've been using it a lot. I didn't realize how much it was. That pop up sewer line cleaning, really, you know, that we have it.
Why don't you explain what that picture on the bottom left is?
So the bottom left, that's how we, well, that's regional lift station. So with the truck, we in the wet well, out the solid top. That all goes into the truck and then dump it in that bin. We'll go up on the dump it in the bin, try to get the water, the rest will dry out, all the solids and things, all shit off. Protect that up. We've been cleaning out all of the stations.
Who's doing that before? How was that getting done?
Using
okay, so saving some money.
What does Bird Tank pick up, please?
Solids that we pull out from the wet wells. From the wet wells, all the sewer sheds, right? There's rags.
Oh, okay.
There's plastic, you know, stuff.
So you put
put something in this tank and then you dump it in this roll off fin and you're backing up onto this ramp.
So how often would we do that before?
We still do it monthly. Yeah. About once a month.
So we're saving basically every month contracting out. What about the other pictures that now what we're doing cleaning
yeah,
that,
that? That's sewer line cleaning. That orange hose kind of like got water on the sewer. Pull it back and has to pull it back and get all the trees. Sewer pipe.
What's the length on that hose, you know?
Oh, not this, sorry.
Yeah, because manholes are like 330,
yeah.
So you'd want a couple hundred extra feet. So,
I think there's 1,500 feet of hose on that material.
We haven't run into any issues when we're cleaning anything out? Like too much pressure going in there or any of that?
No, you can, but, you know, with the training, they're like, hey, you don't want to get it above a certain pressure. You kind of learn, you know, how much pressure, depending on the size of the pipe.
The camera stuff's coming in there.
You can learn from this, from the vendors. You can all learn quickly.
I'm glad to see that it's being used. Yeah.
So are we finding sludge compacted in these pipes that we've been doing?
Awesome that you guys are thinking about that and how to make sure that we're maintaining it too, not just let it fall apart. You know, we don't know how long Do you guys know how long it's been like that, or how long
it's been? So, I mean, we've been pushing it out monthly.
Monthly? That's awesome.
Yeah, so we do have in the sewer budget for this year, I mean, it's been on the budget for a couple months now, even multiple iterations of it, is to go ahead and install these wet wool visors at the six different lift stations.
What type of money savings are we looking at if we install all those? Ballpark.
It's more of a keeping that, those fat grease caps from emulsifying in the wet wells themselves that will eliminate, it will help extend the life of the wet well. Like, instead of that stuff getting into the pumps and clogging the pumps and clogging the sewer system, it's going to eliminate 90% of that. So it's more efficient over time. Also, the stuff that we're dumping into those containers then becomes minimal, 15%. Of what we're doing now, which, yeah, it could eliminate some of the cost of Burtech coming out, but really we're working up bigger picture is installing these wet well wizards, and then some of the other things that we're doing to go in line with the wet well wizards hopefully will lower the COD and TSS in the system that actually makes it to Riverside that we get charged for. So lowering that is the end goal. And also, this is the maintenance along with
BOD and TSS. What is that?
Biological,
oxygen
demand,
and
total suspended solids. There you go. So those are two things that we get an upcharge for every month from the Riverside Treatment Plant that we're trying to eliminate.
So it doesn't save any man hours?
I mean, it does save man hours because we're still going to go there every month and we're still going to clean them, but it's minuscule compared to what we're doing now.
Basically, being able to do an oil change on your car,
right.
It's not saving you the money now, but in the long term, your car is less likely to break down as much because you're doing the maintenance for it now.
Here's some Thompson plant update. So these are the manganese filter vessels. Working on doing one at a time. Get those over there. One was done. And the next two, it was started by our staff, right? Our staff kind of broke out all the piping, and there used to be plastic pipe. Out with the RC Foster. That's the before on the left. We took out all our staff, took out all the piping, there's some management. Mark and Foster did the interior coating. And on the right, that picture, that's the new piping going in there.
The new piping is made out of what material?
Stainless
steel.
And that was the big holdup on this. You guys approved the purchase of the pipe back in December, seems like. It's taken this long to get these here. And so now that they're here, we're ready to go. That vessel will be, those pipes will get installed in that vessel next week. That'll get disinfected. The media will get put in it. That will get disinfected. That vessel will get put into operation. And then the third will be removed from service, and we'll repeat the process with that. We already have the piping for that, so there's no wait. We should be done with this project, put to bed by the end of July. Really excited about that.
And how do we know that it's working properly once everything is set up?
Because we'll monitor the water quality coming out of it, and we'll be able to tell if there's any iron manganese coming out. It should be non-detect. We shouldn't have any.
So moving from plastic to stainless steel, that's a big deal.
Well, also too, what we had seen in the previous, so vessel number three that got rehabbed last year, the plastic had blown out and caused severe issues all throughout the plant. And put that media that's in there, the iron manganese removal media, sent it all over in the plant, just caused chaos. So this is a much better option.
Thank you.
We've had issues with manganese depositing in the bottom of water lines needs to get flushed out. So one method to determine if this thing is effective is that when your water meter is changed, you don't get brown water spat in your face by the shower. Because I can tell you from personal experience, I don't like that.
Isn't that what happened in your neighborhood?
My mom?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very excited about this. And as soon as this second vessel comes back online in a couple of weeks, we'll be instituting a system-wide flushing program that's going to get all that old excess manganese out of our system for good. And not coming back, that'll be such a big milestone. I'm very excited.
Do you think that the next one that we start working on is going to take just as long with the stainless steel coming in?
See how there's two for each one? That's the pipe for the second one.
So all three will be done?
By the end of July.
Oh. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Super.
Now, lowering ranch. So the pressure-reducing valve was taken out of service years ago. Lowering ranch is our lowest point of the district, about 125 PSI. That's with the problem that was not compliant with surging, that's kind of where we received it a while, a couple years ago. So now our staff, what we've done is we put PRV back in service. Not quite done yet. We still have a part to put in, but that's coming next week. That's been a little bit of pressure there from 125 to 85. That piping is 30 years old. Born into 85, that's gonna give us some more time with that pipe. And that's our staff there on the left installing it. So we'll do some flushing and some protests in the area. Also and last. E-certification, Marco Salas, he got a collection. All the guys that got their one. He went and got his two. So, first in our district to get that. Then Jim Wioak, he received a certificate of achievement in water supply technology. Never really know that in college. Eddie Martinez, he received his Associate of Science Water Supply Technology also that same day.
Got another question. Can we bring those guys in one day and recognize that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe give them some kind of a certificate of appreciation? Right.
That would be great.
Yeah, I know those guys are working really hard on that. Also, for the program on the landscaping. Irrigation will be done. Most plants will come next week. The rest of the irrigation, so the line will get from. Should be, about a month. Projects.
Seems like the right time of the year to plant is summer.
We talked to the designer came by yesterday. I had mentioned that to her. She said, as long as the blue balls, as long as we place the drip system, I'm at with the tractor.
Also depends on the plant.
Right. And they're all drop
But I did notice the fencing, so I really appreciate you guys lowering the fencing as much as you
can. We need to lower it a little bit more, please.
No, we're good.
She's not real tall.
I did have an issue with it because I could see from the bottom part, so I was fine.
The designer, was that a firm we hired, or that was Western Walk?
Western Walk. Yeah, that hired.
Thanks.
Thank you, Miguel. Emergency and incident report.
All right, Chief Ottoman will give that report, and then after his normal stuff, he has an additional information to provide.
Good afternoon, directors. How we doing today?
Good, sir. Right.
So, calls for the month of May. We had a total of 287 calls, 14 false alarms, 122 medical aids, 5 other type fires, 4 miscellaneous, 9 public service assists, 1 residential structured fire, 7 standbys, 22 traffic collisions, and 2 wildland fires. Total response time was 4.5. All right, we have a little presentation. So there's questions that were asked of Brian to get some information out. So, so there's some questions asked of the fire department to present to you. We'll get into that real quick, but I'll go through that. So the questions were, are there any vegetation or hazardous field management programs for Cal Fire? What are they and what do they entail? The full report, including checks for the clay fire. And the last one was, what is Cal Fire's philosophy on prescriptive burns? Are they utilized and how frequent? So kind of question one and three, they kind of tie in together. So we'll get into our vegetation management program, and we'll jump into the clay fire. So we do have a vegetation management program through Cal Fire, statewide and locally. And what that entails is the goal of the vegetation management program is, we call them VMPs, reduce the chance of large damaging wildfires by reducing hazardous wildland in California. So how we do that? Through reduction. When we do that, it's reduction of fuels, optimizes the soil for water productivity, so our watersheds, and we protect and improve intrinsic flora and faunal values. So faunal values is our animal life. Okay, how do we go about doing these types of EMPs? So we create fuel breaks. I'll show you guys some examples of education management projects we have going on here in Riverside County. We do fuel breaks. We use hand crews, bulldozers. We try not to use bulldozers too much, but like masticators go through. They'll take a ridge, which I'll show you our main divide fuel break, how they do that. We do pile burning. In prescribed fire, we do pile burning and broadcast burning. And mechanical equipment, we use masticators, hand crews to remove some fuels, pile them. Quick little video. Anyway, so that's an example of a fuel break. So what we do, or what our hand crews will go out there and do, is they remove fuel from roads or ridges, prevent fire from jumping up a ridge or into a community. It also allows for safe routes for people to get out. Like, let's say on that particular one, what they were doing was they were cutting the fuel away from that road, which is an access for to evacuate that area. Basically, if that a fire were to run into that and that fuel breaks in place, radiant heat. Actually, escape. Without that, we're going to get trapped with these boxes. All right, some of the fuel breaks we have going on within Riverside County. So this is the Lake Matthews fuel break, and you can see all these different plots. All those different plots are areas that we go in and burn. And basically, it's kind of like on a rotation. So they pick a plot, and a lot of the times they use training to do that. Some training classes are 34. It's called a firing class, learn how to fire. But we'll use those as plots to burn. Basically, they're taking out unwanted vegetation in there, which also gives us like a fuel break. That's one that's fairly close by. So here's the one I was talking about, our main divide. North Main Divide kind of runs across Riverside and Orange County right at the top of the ridge. And basically, there's a main divide road up there as well. So what they do is they kind of tie these little areas in. So there's a fuel break, Riverside County to Orange County. It runs along the Cleveland National Forest that provides a fuel break for Lake Elsinore and all the other Lakeland Village and all the other communities that run all the way into Corona. So that's something that's ongoing. What we do is we send our hand crews up there, and they go in there with chainsaws, they cut, pile that material. They haven't burned on that one yet, but eventually they'll do that. And right now I know they're doing shipping projects there too. Actually, up there. Project. That's pretty close. This one really affects us. So this is our fuel break vegetation management project was brought forth by the Riverside County Parks and Open Spaces District. I actually asked to apply for a grant with CAL FIRE, which we provided with them. So they lease the land, the Parks District does, from the state. And what they're trying to do, all those red areas that you see here, those are the areas they want to treat and remove unwanted fuels, like invasive fuels such as condo, like the bamboo that is out there, it's very flammable. The idea is to eventually all those areas go in and treat those with fire, and then they'll come in behind and try to take the bulbs out after. That species will actually regenerate fast with fire. So their plan is to treat it with fire and then go in and remove the bulbs either with herbicide or other methods like digging it out. So.
Bamboo was planted by somebody at the river bottom years ago for a specific reason. Do you remember anything about that?
I don't know why it's in there, but like I said, what they're trying to do now, poisonous hemlock in there and the bamboo is in there and it takes over. That's why the fires are spreading so much. In the river bottoms, basic fields, not the natural fields. You have natural fields in there. You get fires, but they're not going to spread quite like they do. That's a project that we're working with, and the plan is to burn in and around those areas, try to remove those fields. That one. Okay, here's another one out in the Banning, Beaumont area. So these are all continuous fuel breaks that are worked on. Basically what they're doing is doing fuel breaks to protect communities of Banning and Beaumont, Cary Valley, ongoing projects. There's a list of some more of them as well. Astro Camp, Lake Skinner, Point of Rocks, Red Hill, Santa Rosa Plateau, and Sinaha. Most of those are up in the San Jacinto Mountains. Obviously, Sinaha is down kind of towards Temecula. Lake Skinner's down in Temecula area. We have a lot of projects going on. It's a priority of the state. Director of the Sacramento, it's statewide. It's to do projects. So that's kind of what we have going on. I hope that answers your questions. Do them or not, and a lot of them are with prescribed fire. Some are for pile and burns, and some are just pile and chip. Right. Any questions on our VMP?
I have a question, but it's not on that.
Okay.
On the report you gave right now with the calls, there were 210 from the Rubidoux station for medical, and then the rest of the, it includes the station 16, 18, and they only have like one call, 12 calls. It's two.
Yeah, those are other patients running into Rubidoux. So if, let's say, 38 tied up on a call, another call in Rubidoux, we're going to see areas.
Okay, so they're all going into
and
Rubidoux area?
And vice versa, too. 38, our engine on a call in Rupert Valley, and that's why it's like closest available resource. So if you get a fire, obviously, they're all going to pool together and we're going to have more resources. Not a lot of them.
So this is only for basically just the Rupert area?
For this service.
Wow. Okay, so there's still more calls throughout the whole city.
Oh, yeah. 38 tied up on a call and another medical aid or a fire.
Right
here on Limonite, or yeah, pull from station 18, 17, any of the.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you mentioned a plant on, was it Orindo or Orindo?
Orindo.
That's O-R.
You know, I have to look up the
action. All right.
So, but I'll get you that information. It's called a Rundo.
Rundo. Invasive is the hemlock, the bamboo, and this rundo.
There's a few other ones.
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere where bamboo was planted many years ago as erosion control type thing. And they could get rid of it. They made a big mistake.
Yeah. It's not easy to get rid of. They are making progress on it.
Are they?
Yeah. Good way to try this.
Maybe it was for the two hippos they threw down there.
Okay, clay fire. Let's talk a little bit about the clay fire. So the clay fire was started back on January 1st, approximately 5:15. It was wind-driven with low humidity. So it was kind of the same time the Palisades and the heat fire were going on. When that fire kicked off, started by a warming and cooking fire of by one of our homeless people. It was investigated. Unfortunately, our prevention, if somebody's cooking a warming fire, there's not much they can do with that. Warn them and tell them, do not start fires, but they can't arrest them for that. Unfortunately, they can't for those offenses. So if it was something to cause harm, arson fire, of course they would. Fire was controlled by January 26th, so it took about 5 days to get that fire all the way mocked up. Heavy fuels, like you talked about, a lot of riparian areas and basic fuels down there, so a lot of fuels that were burned. It was only 39 acres. Total cost of the fire was just over $1 million to suppress. Aircraft, crews, dozers, engine. So I'll get into a little bit. laid the tan line around it, and then it was all about just kind of mopping that fire up from there. So that took days to do that just because of the duff is so deep and a lot of heavy fuel to mop up. And with the conditions we had, we with the dry, windy weather, low humidity, so sure that that fire didn't explode. A few extra days out there. I'll kind of share like our incident action plan. So anytime we get a fire that goes multiple days on extended attack, we do what's called an incident action plan. And this is the incident action plan for that operational period of January 22nd to January 23rd. We either run our crews out there for 24 hours or we do 12-hour shifts. For a few days, we were doing 24 hours on, and then a new crew would come on for the next. So that is a little cover page there. So there's our incident objectives. So basically, we get objectives, management objectives, control objectives, and we have an incident, and basically it spells out what we're trying to do. Objectives is control the fire by using these methods. And the control objectives, we put the fire in a box, and we want that fire to get out of the box that we put in place. So over here is our 203. That tells you who's in charge of what. And the commander was Ben Binmer, by the way. So he was. We had agents because the fire went into Riverside, so we had an agency rep from the city of Riverside. These are our division assignment list and what resources were assigned. So you have engine strike teams and golf strike teams with hand crews out there every day doing the work. We hand these out to every leader that comes out there, every engine leader that's on the engine captain that's on the engine, so they have a good communication plan, our comm plan, what frequency to use for command and back and air to ground. We have a medical plan in case there's an emergency, we know where to take them to the hospital, what's close to burn center. That here is called a 9-line. If there's an emergency, everybody knows how to follow that, radio that back in. Safety message for the day. So every day, we also have a weather briefing. That was our weather for that day. So we want to make sure our firefighters are always the best way to do that is give them a briefing, give them an IMT, understand what the objectives are for the day, and get all the weather updates, safety things to watch out for on the fire line. Every fire is a little bit different. That's an update on the fire we had in January. I expect we'll probably get more in this summer in River Bottom. We know we have issues with fire starts down there. So our folks are, we just had our fire preparedness exercise. Our folks are trained and ready to go. So I hope that answers these questions.
Chief, when you have a fire like that, specifically the Clay Fire, how did we respond to the homeless people and to evacuation?
No, we usually go into unified command with the sheriff, and the sheriff out there. out of our way if we see them in the area, get them out of harm's way to, you know, we evacuate them basically.
Right.
We use the sheriff and EMD to go out there and help evacuate them, take them out of the area. So we get our job done, keep them safe, and make sure that.
So does everybody go to the same evacuation centers?
It depends on what's set up. So a fire this size, we probably would have one evacuation center. So the fire started at the 90. So basically, whoever the incident commander is will designate the place where the evacuation center is, and then we'll put in evacuation, either warnings or orders. And basically, we have a computer program that tells us the different areas and zones that are be under a warning or order. We get order, that's a warning that's just telling people, hey, ready, or fire's kind of coming your way, you need to be ready to go. Once that order comes out, that's an order. We give them a place to go, give them an option, whatever that might be. One of the high schools, usually have pre-designated areas, you know, close to wherever the fire is.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
You had previously given us information about other incidents that occur down there at the River Bottom. My recollection is about 20 or so.
Yeah, the one that we had back over there.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this particular fire, it was around $1 million, and there's other incidents down there. There's other incidents down there. So have you guys been struggling to have access to get to the River Bottom to handle these calls? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a challenge in the River Bottom with the access. You see where the fire is, and a lot of times you're trying to pick your way through to see how you can get there. Once you get people on the ground in there, vegetation's so high, I think, you know, that's kind of scouted out where people are going to go. And they're trying to get the gear and the hose lays out there. And we have hand crews that can set the wave, too. Once we get air attack, which is our aircraft that kind of runs all of the aircraft for the incident, they can see what's going on. They can help direct. They come in through their side. Maybe we need to go to the south side of the river, access that way. Have to access both sides if the fire jumps over the actual river.
So there isn't some continuous access on the north side of the river?
No, but usually most of our fires start where they're
people, yeah.
So we know where that is.
So. Go figure. So these people living in the River Bottom, great names, warming fires.
No, it was just warming fires. Fires.
So I can tell you the way I view it. The people there, if they're the source of the fire, right, that it's a fire that should not have occurred. It doesn't matter to me whether they're down there and they shouldn't be and they're cooking, or they're down there and they shouldn't be and they're cold, or they're down there and they shouldn't be and they're just lighting the cars on fire like they did 3 days ago over by where I work. So the people that are down there are suffering, and my opinion is that by saying, well, there's nothing you can do about it, right, that just continues the suffering, and it's expensive.
So,
but I appreciate the information.
Yeah, there has been multiple arrests of people in arson fires.
Yeah.
One, I mean, like I said, our prevention officers, actually the oldest state law enforcement agency back in the 1800s. They go in and they investigate everything and try to find what happened. Individuals out of there. So that's the ultimate goal. People out of there, so unwanted fires.
I think their lives would be better if they weren't living in a River Bottom.
Right. I think so too.
Yeah.
Thank you for your presentation. It was really informative.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Okay, next up we had the general manager and staff reports.
I just have one kind of report. So last Thursday, a couple of us had the opportunity to attend the WRCOG 34th Assembly. So for those of you not familiar, WRCOG stands for the West Riverside Council of Governments. So the purpose of WRCOG is to unify Western Riverside County to speak as a collective voice on important issues affecting its members. Members are predominantly cities like River Valley and Eastvale and Corona and most of the cities in Western Riverside County. But there are two water districts that are members, Western Municipal Water District and Eastern Municipal Water District. So we were invited to the event from Western, so we got two extra tickets. I had mentioned it at the previous board meeting, maybe as an email, for those who wanted to attend. So the keynote speaker, they've had a lot of kind of high-profile keynote speakers over the years. The one last Thursday was retired U.S. Navy Admiral William McCraven. Might not be a household name for a lot of you, but he was the commander that oversaw SEAL Team 6. Famously, they neutralized Osama bin Laden in 2011, among other high-profile assignments. So a lot of his speech was, you know, military-esque and taking risks and stuff like that. So Director Altamirano was there, Brandon and myself were there. So first time I've ever attended, I didn't really know what to expect. It was really well put together and really well done. So hopefully we are invited to the same thing in the future. And if you're interested, I will let you know. Or if you're interested, let me know. And once we get the invite, I can kind of coordinate accordingly. So, Director, I don't know if you have anything else to add to that.
It's an amazing event. I think all of you guys should go, especially to connect with a lot of other city leaders and the county supervisors. And it's a time for you guys to get to know them off the clock and really get to talk to them, especially, you know, how we have some issues with the city of Riverside. And a lot of people don't know about that. And even some of their own council members are not really aware of those issues. So I think it's a great opportunity for us, all of us, to go out there and get to talk to our county representatives and especially get more support. But also it's good for especially our agencies to be able to talk to them. And I know that now they have connected us to be able to have some access to grant writers.
Chris did put me in contact with somebody. Yes.
So we could be able to take advantage of that. So maybe we could partner with the city or try to see how we can tap into those resources, knowing that we're a smaller agency and really can't afford to be a member with them. And I don't think they're even taking members anymore.
Correct. We cannot be members, but since we fall under Western's umbrella and they are members, like, I've made it known to the Western guys that any type of these, any of these kind of events, like, we would happily love to attend or participate.
I think it's great for even if we don't make it, to make sure that staff goes, because they are the face of Rubidoux. So they need to make sure that they're in contact with these agencies and our partners and build those relationships with them so we can have more representation and a stronger voice when we need support.
Well, that's all I had for manager's comments.
And he asked me for pictures, but all I had was selfies.
I did scour their social media for pictures. I couldn't find anything. Maybe it's only been a week. I'm sure more will roll.
They
out.
Will eventually put the professional ones. They're all blurry because it was nighttime, and they were just my friend pictures. I'm like, yeah, I don't know how these are gonna look up there, but they were cute. I'll show them to you guys.
Committee reports.
There was one committee meeting since the last board meeting, personnel committee, but it relates to agenda item 8C, which is on tonight's agenda, so I didn't really want to elaborate about the reorg pursuant to DM 2025-56. So there's a full committee report embedded into that staff report, so we'll talk about it then.
Okay. Action items, discussion items. Director's Memorandum 2025-54.
So, as you'll remember, last board meeting, we brought forth ordinance 2025-141 that will take the place of ordinance 86. It's our new backflow cross connection ordinance that updates the ordinance and gives us more ability to enforce our backflow program. This is also a requirement for the new cross connection policy handbook set forth by the State Water Resource Control Board for California. And with this approval of the ordinance tonight, we'll be able to set that in place and mail off our plan to the state and get it approved by the state of California. So with that, with the approval, it also requires us to conduct a second public hearing and approve the ordinance. That's the recommendations for tonight.
Can I make a motion?
I had one thing I wanted to go over on that. last meeting I brought it up that there were four reasons for turning off the water. The reasons 2, 3, and 4 were immediate turn off. And the language in the ordinance is that we're going to attempt to contact the people. It doesn't specifically say that we're going to leave some notice, that for some note, some door hanger, that we've turned it off with a phone number. So is it the intent when we turn the water off to leave a note?
It's not so specific in the ordinance. It's more called out in the plan. The ordinance just tells us, just lets them know that we're going to make an attempt to let you know that we're turning the water off and for what reason. The plan specifies how exactly we're going to go about that.
You need to say that to me again. I'm sorry. The plan specifies. What's the plan?
In accordance with the new cross-connection control policy handbook that was issued by the state, there are three components that we need to have for our cross-connection control in our district. One of them is legal authority, ordinance. The legal authority needs to spell out, needs to at least give us the authority to turn someone off. So that's what this does. Now, the method by which we notify people, that's located in a different component, which is the plan. The third component is the actual implementation of the program. So those three components kind of go hand in hand, but the first one that we need to get through is just the legal authority. And then our whole document gets submitted to the state, which includes the ordinance, the plan, and the program. That all gets submitted to the state for their review.
Are we going to see the plan after this, the ordinance?
So once the state has a chance to review it and they give us the green light that we're good, then we'll be able to present it to the board.
Thank you for making that easier to understand.
Yeah, not a problem.
Okay.
Are we ready? I can make a motion.
Do we plan to incorporate Dr. Murphy's comment into the plan?
So into the plan, yes, but into the ordinance, no. And I think the reason why not in the ordinance is because as technology changes and our approach to how we involve our customers change, it would be limiting for us to make it a certain way in the ordinance. In the plan, we can update it just by presenting it to the board. Our ordinance, though, that requires public hearings. It requires quite a bit more than just our plan.
Thank you.
Okay. I have.
Okay, Director, Leslie was the first on that motion.
Do we
have
a second? We've
got to do the public hearing.
We got to open the public hearing.
Sorry
about that. Public hearing opens. Director, Memorandum 2025-20-54.
Any comments?
Is there anybody in the waiting room?
Mm-hmm.
Public hearing is closed.
I can make a motion.
Director Altamirano is the first. Is the second?
Second.
Director Lages is the second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Director Memorandum 2025-55, public hearing.
Okay, another public hearing, but a different topic. So I wasn't here a couple of weeks ago. I know Chief Ottoman is here. I know the Fire Marshal Division, Kylie was there. Kylie's not with us this evening, but another member from her department, Michelle, is with us. So I'm not going to kind of bring up a lot of the deliberation that was done 2 weeks ago. I think a lot of questions were asked during that time. I haven't gotten any other comments from the board since that time. I do have some slides, though, just very, very high level. So I'm not going to read that, right? So this is the second reading adoption of Ordinance 2025-142. Essentially, what we're trying to accomplish this is these fire hazard severity zone maps that we were talking about. So as you all know, RCSD provides fire protection services within its service area in partnership with CAL FIRE via a cooperative agreement with the County of Riverside. So pursuant to Government Code Section 51178 and 51179, we are required as the local jurisdiction to adopt these fire hazard severity zone maps by ordinance within 120 days of receipt from the Office of the State Fire Marshal. So just doing some math, the maps are released on March 24th at 120 days. These need to be effective by July 22nd, 2025. So what are fire hazard severity zone maps? They are tools developed by the State Fire Marshal that classifies land based on their potential for wildfire, using factors like fuel, slope, and weather, and they are categorized as moderate, high, or very high. So I'm not going to read the ordinance title. There it is. But the operative provisions are the board will designate these fire hazard severity zone areas as recommended by the State Fire Marshal. The board will adopt the maps, and then this will be effective 30 days after adoption. So the timeline, these maps have been available to the public. They've been on our website since April 23rd. 2 weeks ago, June 5th, was the introduction and the first reading. There was a staff report, there was a presentation by Kylie, and then there's board deliberation and questions. Based on the majority vote at that time, we proceeded forward with the timeline to tonight, which is the second reading and the public hearing. The day after last board meeting, we published the notice of public hearing in the Press Enterprise and posted it on the windows. That abides by the 10-day minimum notice period for an ordinance. Tonight, June 19th, is the second reading, public hearing, and consideration to adopt. And then if it does pass tonight, it will be effective 30 days from today, which is July 19th.
Okay. Ready and wavering?
No. Got two more slides for you. So the purpose of a public hearing, receive testimony and comments regarding the proposed adoption. As I mentioned, we did the notice of public hearing. We have not received any testimony or comments from members of the public, and I've received no further substantive comments from the board as it relates to this ordinance. Budget considerations, no significant fiscal impact, right? A lot of the staff time, the noticing, that's kind of incorporated into the existing operational budgets. The only thing is to post the public hearing in the Press Enterprise, it costs like a few hundred bucks, right? Yeah. To me, that's trivial. So the recommendation is to conduct the public hearing, and then after that, consider adoption of Ordinance 2025-142. Michelle, I don't know if you want to add anything. I don't know if it's necessary, but, you know, if you want to add anything before they do the public hearing, now is the time.
I think you pretty much covered everything that I would discuss. It is something that the state requires us to do, to have this adopted per city, per county. And yeah, if you have any questions, let me know.
Okay. There's these fire hazard maps. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Fire. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. There's these fire hazard maps. What is the expected frequency in which they'll be revised?
Typically, it's supposed to be revised every 5 years. However, the last map we had was 2011, so it had been quite some time since the map was redone and released. But the goal on the state side is to have it done every 5 years.
So if you have an area that's currently a high fire hazard area that's undeveloped and it becomes developed, do you anticipate that the fire hazard would be revisited to determine whether or not the fire hazard had reduced?
Not necessarily. The way the maps come about, it has to be the same requirements basically throughout the state, looking at topography, certain types of plants, the fire history, things like that. The development is not considered as part of the criteria for designating the different zones.
So when you're talking about plants, you're talking about plant type or plant density?
It could be both. So with the they set up different criteria. We don't have all the detail, the exact details of how the map becomes, but they do, they may say like five different plants across the board where, you know, maybe other jurisdictions don't have that, but they try to keep everything consistent that way throughout the whole state. It's It's following the same regulation.
Who is they?
The maps come from CAL FIRE.
And who do you work for?
Riverside County Fire.
Okay. So the state fire marshal develops these maps, and the anticipated looking at it again every 5 years or so, although it's been 2011 to 2025,
Yeah, it's
but
been quite some time.
yeah. So there's land that's currently not developed that's a high fire hazard area. So they're going to get, when if they want to develop, they're going to have to harden their proposed structures. And then when they go to revise these maps, they're not going to look at a change in land use. Is that my understanding?
So one of the things that they, several of the things like the slide that Brian showed in the criteria is the topography, the fire history, the climate, the weather, the plants. It's not necessarily incorporating where they're going to look at each city and see what was developed in that time.
All right, thanks. Thank you for the information.
This is actually a way to deter housing development because that is one way that they would deny projects if it's in the high fire area.
Okay. So,
Thank you, Michelle.
Sure.
thank you, Michelle. So we go to open session, open discussion. Anybody in the waiting room? Nobody there? Session closed. All right. We have a need to make a motion on this.
I'll make a motion.
Director Altamirano is the first. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Director Leza is the second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Thank you. Next we have Director's Memorandum 2025-56.
Okay. So this is the consideration for reorganization for central personnel and positions. So with the development of a sewer team and the equipment that we're getting, we realized that we need to make some changes. So we developed the utilities field supervisor position that will oversee water and sewer field maintenance. With that, we reclassified the senior utility maintenance worker position into a lead utility worker position, one for water and one for the sewer team. We also reclassified one utility maintenance worker, one, two, into a utility maintenance worker for the collections team as well. So then now the org chart will look like director of ops, supervisor of water and sewer, and then leads, one for water, one for sewer, and then the utility workers that work with them under them, right? We also, in this, we just wanted to shore some things up, and we moved the meter reader position into the customer service department because traditionally the meter reader position works with the customer services team more, and really it's outside of the director of operations scope of influence, so we wanted to just make that right. And then also our cross connection field inspector, we changed that to cross connection and source control field program coordinator so that they will now be overseeing a lot of the pre-treatment and source control that we do in the district. A lot of it is sent out to a third party engineering firm to take care of some of the permitting. We're going to take that in-house and relieve the district of some of those costs. We think we have the personnel in-house to do that. That is the end of the reorganization. There is no full-time employees added. This will all be internal promotional opportunities. There's minimal physical impact. This year we'll see around, I think it's around $20,000 in additional costs from employee salaries.
and then you
all
know,
together.
All together.
Because I looked at it and I thought I saw somewhere an average of $5,000 to $6,000 per.
Per there is so what so with the leads. With the leads, what we're doing is increasing the scale 10%.
Okay.
So it's not an automatic 10%.
They have a chance to excel. They have a chance.
Okay. Right. And same thing with the cross-connection program coordinator. Right? The same thing. That's just an extension of their scale 10%. And then the real one is taking the field supervisor position. That is a significant, a 30% increase from the lead position, but it's not out of the realm without filling that in, internal. If they're promoted from within, that'll be a 5%
offset. But as far as I can tell, it also involved a significant increase in education.
Yeah.
So
this is going to bring a lot of accountability, a lot of internal growth, empowerment of the employees, and you know, actually overseeing the sewer system and giving it the eyes that it needs, this is really going to give us a lot moving forward.
Bob, you know, after being in the personnel committee with it, I see this as something that just had to be done. And, you know,
okay, are we ready to make a motion?
So there's two parts to this.
There's two parts to this. So, so this reorg, you know, a lot of time has spent on this. I know we talked about it at the sewer committee. That was back in March in conjunction with the sewer back there and the personnel committee. So what kind of runs parallel to this is the salary schedule district-wide, right? So this really affects kind of four or five different positions, right? But we needed to kind of establish this and then take this and then build a new salary schedule, right? So we have various employment agreements. So we have an MOU. I have a contract. That sets forth kind of the cost of living adjustment, right? So the cost of living adjustment is kind of a fiscal year adjustment. And that's based upon the CPIU index for the San Bernardino Riverside, Ontario statistical area. We set forth that language at the last MOU. That's rounded to the two nearest decimal places. That equates to 2.61%. The support is in there behind the salary schedule. So Brandon's thing, it's one motion for all of his stuff, but what needs to happen is a second motion for the salary schedule with the 2.61%. That will be effective June 23rd, right? So it's not a clean fiscal year cutoff. We did away with that last year. June 23rd is the first day of the new pay period that stretches into the new fiscal year. So there's no pro rata calculation that we need to do. So that's the salary schedule as calculated, 2.6%. So our recommendation of staff is for the board to act on items 1 through 7 with one motion, and then item 8 with a second motion.
Okay. So the first motion we're looking for is items 1 through 7. Do we have a first on that? That was
I
go ahead.
So shifting the meter reader over to customer service. So my understanding is we're looking at doing this automatic meter reading stuff, and the implementation on that would be over some number of years. I don't know, 2 years, maybe 5 years. Plan on the meter reader.
So the meter reader is still going to read meters. So right now the AMI project, we're just finalizing the RFP right now, and we should go out to bid here in the next month or so, which is very exciting for us. And then it looks like an actual 6 to 8 month implementation, so it's going to happen very quickly. We hope for about 5,000 meters, which is roughly 3/4 of our service area, right? So I mean a little less, but with that extra time, there's still going to be a lot that has to be done with actually responding to some of the misreads and some of with the new infrastructure that's going in, that somebody's going to need to be proficient in, you know, the change out of the batteries and reprogramming some of the systems. So with that, with the additional time that the meter reader position does have, there's some of the duties that the maintenance workers are currently doing, like rereads, going out and finding misreads, those duties will get shifted to the meter reader position, and that will allow them to focus more on running the sewer vector, operating a video van in the future one day, like things like that. We're going to keep freeing up time like that and ultimately be able to be more self-sufficient.
So for meter reading, we're currently operating at more than one full-time equivalent. We have other people doing meter reading tasks?
Correct.
Okay. So we're anticipating that when we switch over to these automatic reading, it's still going to be a full-time job to deal with misreads?
Well, currently there's employees that work, they call it office shift, and they used to deliver red cards 2 days a week. Two people 2 days a week would deliver those red cards. Now we're not doing that anymore. Now we're able to focus on the sewer system more. And with this and the meter reader position, having the ability to go out and do the rereads will actually free up more of the maintenance worker's time, focus on maintenance worker activities. So that's a very exciting thing.
So we'll have one designated person doing that one job instead of different maintenance people that we're taking away from other things that they know how to do.
Right, and the meter reader can also go out and change out meters in the future. Right now, the meter reader has a 40-hour week where they do nothing but read meters and currently don't have the time to go out and get those rereads or misreads or things like that or change meters. So.
But with the changes, it will basically still give them the 40 hours a week with only doing that and freeing up other people.
Yep.
So right now we have more than one person doing that.
Absolutely.
So we have the meter reader dealing with
meters.
Reconnects, I guess.
Reconnects, meter changes, rereads.
Basically an extension of customer service, but in the field. Right? Is that how we kind of
characterize
it? Okay.
All right. That answers my question.
Right. So we had on the items promotion, items 1 through 7, Alton Marano was the first. Who was the second on that one? First
one. Motion.
Director Leza. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. On the second item, on the second motion, we have item number 8.
The motion to
approve item 8. Second. Director Altamirano.
What is motion 8 exactly?
Approval of the fiscal year 25-26 salary schedule incorporating the same reorganization changes and applying the 2.61% cost of living adjustment. So that's staff recommendation number 8. Is that how I understand the motion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The COLA is, what is the amount of the COLA?
2.61%.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
It actually was up at 4%, wasn't it?
I have to support the fact that CPIU for Riverside, San Bernardino, Ontario, the typical area.
Okay. All right, so... Who was the first on that?
Your belly.
Director Leslie was the first?
The second one.
Oh, I was. Scarbellis was first. Who was second? Leslie was second. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? All right.
I am opposed.
The motion is opposed here by Director Murphy. Okay, so. Director's comments. No.
Got one more.
Two more. Directors, let me see. 57. Directors Memorandum 2025-57.
Kirk will give that staff report.
All right, so this one is to go for the formal adoption of our 25-26 budget. So, as you are well aware, we have completed three budget workshops. We did our first budget workshop on April 24th. The second on May 1st, and third budget workshop on May 15th. So with this, we did follow up after our May 15th budget workshop, and I did send you all a kind of updated draft. Did not get any comments back on the updated draft. Subsequent to you receiving that draft, we did do one final internal meeting with staff to discuss any possible changes or anything like that, and I listed those out.
as far as the antenna bullet points, bottom of page 2 of the CM and top of page 3. Those kind of, so we kind of talked about it during our budget workshop, but we have the central services allocation, kind of where we take the general fund charges, but the other enterprise funds for kind of office staff, just general, you know, indirect expenses. I can't really finalize those until I finalize the total general fund budget. It's really the very last thing that we do. The general fund budget kind of drives those expenses for the other funds. So those got finalized. We finalized kind of how the excess property tax gets kind of funneled around this year. So we finalized with that. So the, on page 3 of 15 of the budget, we finalized with sending $50,000 to the trash fund. $1,870,000 to the water fund and $750,000 to the water fund. That's all excess property tax revenues that we've received that are kind of in excess of like our Cal Fire contracts, other general fund costs that we think we can help subsidize some of the other funds and give them a little bit of help. We finalized those once we kind of really honed in. Those were updated. We updated the overall, we actually reduced the overall water operating expenses by $112,000. I did do an update to salaries and reflect the changes that were from the DM before this for the reorg. So we did try and incorporate those into this budget so we wouldn't have to change it again. So those changes have been included in this budget. We've also updated kind of just our general final estimates on the EDUs, that's the capacity fees that will come in. So when someone develops and they give us a water capacity fee or sewer capacity fee, but we've updated those just to make sure that they're as current as we give our best guess of what we think we will actually kind of receive next year. Obviously, those are estimates, so what happens depending on development can really fluctuate. But we'll see what we actually do gain from 25-26. In the water master plan, we reduced the Golden West Reservoir design by 100,000. On the water CIP, I noticed that I didn't have a rollover for the Thompson Plant iron and manganese vessel rehab. That's the project that Brandon was discussing. That one's just getting off the grant, like kind of going to finish in July. I wanted to make sure that that budget gets adopted, approved budget, so that gets rolled over into the next year. I presented that in there, so that way when we get those final invoices in July, that we have the appropriate budget in there for that. We reduced our overall sewer operating expenses by $74,000, and then we increased sewer other equipment by $20,000. So there's not like a whole lot that really changed, mostly reductions. From that, but I don't know if you have any other questions regarding the budget. I know we've kind of gone over it a few times. But
how do you determine what the EDUs are?
I work with Jacqueline, and we try and determine what developments we think will come online during that year. And generally, when we're putting meters down, that's when we'll collect the EDUs and capacity fees. We really try and take our best guess of when we think that's going to happen to see when that money can actually
it's a guesstimate.
Come out the door. Yeah, and we can base it on how large that community is going to be, how far along we think they'll be. Again, it's really at the mercy of how fast those developments go, or if we know one's finishing up and it's going to for sure probably go in the next year, then we're more confident in those ones, obviously. But we really do try and do our best. But again, remember these capacity fees drive like master plan projects, and they're not really directly affecting our normal operating budget. So it doesn't come into much of a critical role, but it is good to kind of, when we do master plan projects, to try and see what revenue is going to come in. That's cash that we would love to utilize, right? Obviously, sometimes on those EDUs, we balance it out with sometimes there are swaps where we'll say the developer will build a infrastructure in exchange for the EDU, so it's like, hey, don't just give me money for me to give it back to you for a project. We call them swaps. So I'll budget for those revenues, and I'll kind of show a project in there with offsetting expenses, so I'll end up netting to zero. But it makes it a little bit more transparent in the budget.
I do appreciate you taking the time to give us two different meetings to explain all this stuff to us, especially the newer for us that are new here. It was a lot of information.
There are a lot of moving pieces. I make it as simple as possible. And I look at numbers a lot. I also want our departments to be able to utilize it and see where they're at, what we're doing, be able to have that information.
Right.
So I'm taking everybody's perspective.
Well, you did a great job. Thank you for that.
Well, with that, I'm open to any questions, any comments, but other than that, I think preparing slides and kind of over it. If you have any comments on the changes that happened, I'm glad to go in and help with those. But other than that,
any questions, comments?
I think I'm ready to vote.
I have some questions. Well, I want to make sure that I'm understanding this correctly. On page 11, there's item 18. The operating expense video line inspection. The number there is 100,000. So this is for videoing the sewer. So what we're expecting to do is clean it and video it. That's what that's for.
Good.
All right. Then on page 6, item 74, that's the forklift / man lift. So my recollection is that earlier there was a request by staff to acquire a forklift. I guess it didn't get bought. Now we're budgeting for a forklift and a man lift. So my understanding of a forklift is for lifting something heavy off of the ground. And for a man lift, you're talking about something to inspect the top of tanks, lift a person up. Not understanding why it is that we don't know which we're getting.
We just try to, we pivoted this. It was identified last year that a forklift would be beneficial. And while it would be beneficial, we've found creative ways to use the backhoe to move some heavy stuff around. Where we do end up renting man lifts quite often to get into our treatment vessels and to do work on top of the treatment vessels and to get up higher onto the sides of reservoirs and do things like that, where a man lift would be much more beneficial at this point.
So you have the treatment vessels at the treatment plant and you're trying to get on the top of those, and you have the water tanks and you're trying to get on the top of those. Water tanks not have ladders.
Yes, but it's when you need to access the sides up high, if you're trying to get to the targets that are on the side of them that let you know how much water is in them, we're going to be implementing a lot of new SCADA technology this year. And when we do that, there's going to be parts that go up high on antennas. There's lots of reasons why we may need a man lift.
And that's the budget to purchase our own? That's not
yes,
to be renting it?
That's the budget to purchase our own.
Because we already rent it all the time. I'm really all for having our own equipment instead of spending the money to continue to rent it when we know we need it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm all for that.
Okay.
I still have more questions. So next is the expenditure on this computer stuff.
Okay.
So it occurs on several locations, so I'll just list them off. On page 1, there's items 38 and 39. That's computer system support and computer miscellaneous hardware. Then we also have the other page. Page 6 again. Line items 56 and 57. That's computer support and hardware. It's like another 100,000. And then there's 72 IT upgrades and implementation at 60,000. I recall there was one more. Guess not. So what I'm trying to understand is there's the computer expenditure for the GIS, and there's our server, IT server, and we're talking about getting a new IT server, and then there's this company that we pay to provide IT support, and I've received numerous comments about that were not happy with the IT company that we're using. So these line items, does that include the GIS, or the GIS is a separate one?
GIS is a separate one. This one, too, the number 38 on page 1, that is the computer system support. That is the contract with Acorn. That's where that funding comes from.
So that's Acorn is flying.
Our IT provider, yeah, that's included in one of those. So that's where those expenses get allocated.
All right. And then for, I think it was page 6 again, computer system line 56 and 57, that's like 90 and 10. Like another 100,000. Is that also Acorn, or that's something different?
That's hardware. That's hardware.
So we're looking at buying a server.
Yeah. So like for example, the other day, a switch went down for the SCADA system, and that was $2,300. So we also put in kind of safeties in here in case we have IT issues that happen. Not necessarily will we spend entirely this budget, but it is nice in an emergency when equipment goes down that we have some flexibility there. We are in the need of purchasing roughly about 15 laptops for district staff. Their laptops are about 5 years old, and they're due for renewal. And then also the servers is one thing that we're trying to balance out with the GIS project and Acorn. That contract, by the way, is up in November. We're hoping to offer RFP for that one. That's why that comes up. But we don't want to necessarily utilize that vendor to redo our whole entire structure because our equipment is old. We also don't want to hold up the GIS project. So we're kind of in a holding point there.
It wouldn't make sense to have a vendor you're not happy with provide you equipment and then get a different vendor who's then going to say the equipment was no good.
Yeah. We've talked about having a kind of like a standalone GIS just so that we keep going forward with it, right, and not, you know, be slowed down, but also that kind of system being a standalone kind of seems to have some value as well.
So on page 6, there's this item 72 and 73. That's the SCADA system replacement water portion. That's $300,000. So when you have a card that goes down for the SCADA, that gets charged to IT, or that gets charged to SCADA?
If something is for SCADA, then it goes directly towards SCADA.
And then where is the line item for GIS? I was looking for that. I couldn't find it.
It is in the software. Okay. Your computer system software.
So that's 56 and 57 on page 6?
Yeah.
Okay. And then that's for water. And then for GIS, we're also going sewer. Is there a sewer line item for that?
So what we pay for GIS is we have like a yearly agreement, and that amount is like set, and that provides us for both water and sewer. So what we're currently doing in GIS is we have a retainer package. We have not engaged in what would be like that enterprise that would bring everything here. When I gave that presentation, remember I said we're all in the cloud. Everything's in the cloud right now. So we have yet to bring anything here until after everything's worked out with the server. Once the server is set up, then we can kind of bring everything.
So when you gave that GIS presentation, we're talking about units being used?
Yes. So there's credits. So the online stuff is all credits, and we're trying to move away from that. What we've done in the interim is we have a small retainer package for a set number of hours to provide us with technical training and assistance in GIS that can be used now. And so this can be used now to develop the platforms that we want in the cloud for now. But they can also give us ways to kind of bridge the gap until we get a server that where we can bring everything online, but bring everything to
the online. Plan is to take this data that's on the cloud and put it on a server that's in the building.
Correct, yes.
All right.
Kind of like what we saw at the JCSB building in that big room.
Yeah, that was their SCADA.
That's SCADA.
Then my last question is, my understanding, there's three line items that are for the building renovation. Is that right?
Water, sewer,
17. The building remodel is spread over three line items. Figure out which three they were.
Let's see here. You have, right, because we have loan proceeds, right? So line 60 on page 2, we're going to take money from those proceeds, cover the cost on line 57.
Of the same page?
Of the same page, correct. And then, I don't know if there's anything on the water side.
On that field admin budget.
Yeah, so then the field admin budget, right, that's money that we've been kind of putting away, going back to, I think, 2012. Oh, sorry. Yeah, page 15. That we haven't been adding money to that other than what's been earned on interest, so I want to tap into that money, too.
So that's the $800,000.
823, yeah. So the way we're gonna go about this is we're gonna tap into this money, we're gonna tap into the loan proceeds. Like as we're going through this process, I don't know if you've been tracking the RFP on Planet Bids. We did extend that out. We got 65 questions that we're working through, so we need to extend that out. But this will be phased, right? So we're trying to plan. Okay, this first fiscal year, how much of that entire project do we think we can kind of chew off? And that's kind of our current estimate, like $1.5 million.
You're anticipating spending $1.5 million in the next fiscal year on a building remodel?
Yes, that's a very rough estimate, just depending on how this progresses. All of that would be borne from existing reserves and loan proceeds.
So I've been looking at the front yard, sort of a remodel of the front yard. How would you characterize the progress on the front yard? Been going smoothly or not going smoothly?
I think it's been going smoothly. I think there are certain things that had to fall into place for us to be able to push this process forward. But I think as it stands right now, things are moving. We did a lot of the demo work a long time ago, so it looked like it was stagnant for a period of time. But we're working through the process with West End to get to secure the. Because remember, we're trying to get 100% of that covered through rebates or grant funding. So we're trying to minimize out-of-pocket some of the money that we acquired this fiscal year. If we were to wait, we can acquire even more money next fiscal year because the fiscal year is about to end. So that's kind of we're trying to strategize the financial component of that.
Most of the changes that we implemented were changing the fencing and our suggestions,
yeah, too. That was minimal, but again, I mean, Miguel's led that project. I think it's gone smoothly. We've purposely slowed it down in order to minimize out-of-pocket costs and make sure that it fits the purpose.
Okay. Thank you for answering my questions. I'll move for approval of the. If no one else has any questions, I'll move for approval.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Okay, now.
Take a break. I'm going to do
that. You don't smoke.
Regular session when you report that.
Oh, okay. The president should report out.
Closed session. Open session. Closed session.
No reportable action.
No reportable action.
Okay.
Our next meeting is
June 26th.
A week from today, special meeting, two items on the agenda, trash rates, public protest hearing, and trash contract amendment number 3.
Oh, same time?
Hank, they have to schedule the next two special meetings for the 26th.